Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Nalin. Another great week. Just got back from SEC Media Days, but the team, without Arch Manning, Michael Taft, or Anthony Hill there, kept up off-season workouts. We got some of the latest notes on that. Make sure you like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel for all the latest details on Texas Longhorns football. And of course, if you have not done so yet, go to InsideTexas.com. $1 will get you access all the way up until when toe meets leather in Columbus. So recruiting, got a few more decisions to track, team info, camp starts soon, pads come on, all the different stuff as Texas gets closer to that Ohio State game, just for $1. And of course, by Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football is 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. That is the best way to get caught up on not just the Texas Longhorns, every single player on the roster, but also the entire SEC, the landscape of college football. And Eric, of course, you wrote the 2025 recruiting look back, and we'll actually talk about a few of those players today. But overall, young O-linemen helping to build depth, speed at cornerback from young and old players alike, got to focus on Justice Terry's athleticism. It's a lot different, five-star athleticism, obviously. And the rest of the defensive tackle room is a great thing for Kenny Baker to be working with. But let's look at what Kyle Flood's working with. We kind of have an idea of who's at the top of the depth chart, maybe what that starting five competition looks like. But there are a lot of players, some who have been on campus for a few months, some who have been on campus for a few years, who are really trying to find their way, maybe not into the starting lineup necessarily, but into that circle of trust that every O-line coach wants to have heading into a season.
Yeah, it's my biggest concern of the year is the offensive line and offensive line depth more specifically. It's, you know, we're always asking questions, who's ready, who's not, where are they at in their progression. Nick Brooks was the first person mentioned this week just when I was asking about the team in general, so that's a good sign. Nick has been become known for his hard work. Yeah, he had that blip earlier in the season off the field, but he's doing all the right things on the field, off the field, earning the trust of the coaches, earning the trust of his teammates. But really works very hard. I asked the source if he's ready to play this year. Source said, yeah, in a pinch, and could maybe even play at guard if they need him. Probably a year away from truly being ready. Definitely has all the tackle traits that Kyle Flood looks for. But if they need him this year, it might get a little sketchy.
I think with Brooks, I remember after a lot of recruits went to a practice in the spring, that was a player that a lot of different defensive and offensive players highlighted. So that was during the spring. And then I think you saw him go with DeAndre Moore, Colin Simmons, and Arch Manning up to St. Louis for Ryan Wingo's camp. So it seems like he's trying to, yeah, he had that blip like you mentioned, but he's doing all the right things to get back in the good graces.
Yeah, he's ingratiating himself with his teammates. I think that said a lot that he was up there with Wingo and Arch up in Missouri. Very bright future. Can't say that enough. But you know, he's not Kelvin Banks as far as readiness goes, but maybe we're starting to hear some things about the work ethic being similar to Trevor Goosby, which is very promising. But as far as this year goes, I'm a little bit more concerned. Jaden Chapman, a source said this is a big year for him because Nick Brooks is going to be a player. It's just a matter of when. So Chapman kind of has to really, you know, if he gets an opportunity this year, Chapman's got to seize it. He was a little dinged up during the spring. He's healthy now. He's got that advantage over Nick Brooks going into his third year. Same amount of time in the program as Arch, same amount of time in the program as Goosby. So Chapman, if he gets his opportunity this year, he's really has to seize it. Another player we talked about was Andre Kodjo. He could maybe play guard if they need it. I'm not sure that he's a tackle long term, even though he has slimmed up and looks better. I'm just not sure he's exactly the athlete they're looking for. But athleticism is probably good enough for guard. So it seems like they can move some tackles to guard if they need to, but that still leaves a question of who are the backup tackles. Right now, it might be Nick Brooks or might be Jaden Chapman.
There was one more name that you mentioned, and that was Nate Kibble. He's not in that tackle to guard category, but even last year on scout team, he was someone that drew a lot of praise, and it seems like he's continuing that as summer goes on.
Yeah, bright future. I think, you know, they're right at the very, very beginning of when he could probably play. Obviously, it wouldn't be ideal, but he is playable this year. At least the source thinks so. Bright future, probably starting next year at right guard after DJ departs. Would be a little sketchy. You know, I'm hoping to see all these guys in September. I don't want to see them on August 30th, but I want to see them all of September play a lot. And I think we'll get a much better idea, certainly in August. But then, you know, obviously we'll have a lot of game tape on these younger guys come September, given the schedule.
Move over to the defensive side of the ball. I know a lot of fans really like hearing about speed numbers. There's a specific speed number that kind of coincides with being fast. And there are guys up and down, it sounds like, in Mark Orfe's room, one young, one old, some all over the place as far as years go, who are what you would consider fast.
Yeah, I stumbled on this question because I heard Caleb Chester, true freshman, one of the least heralded players in the number one class last year, had a good week. Picked off Matthew Campbell. I asked about his speed. Can he stick at corner long term? Chester's a smart kid, a bigger kid. Source said that he does feel like he can stay at corner because he's technically sound. Said, you know, Malik Muhammad's not the fastest guy on the team, but his technique is solid. So Caleb Chester had a good week. So, just asking about speed, I transitioned to ask who the fastest corner is. And some might be surprised, but I'm not truly surprised. I heard Jalen Gilbo, when Jadae Barron was at nickel and Gilbo was at nickel right behind him, I asked, are these guys fast enough for corner? And we heard, yeah, they're definitely fast enough for corner. They're two of the fastest guys. And then, we all saw what Barron ran in the combine. Gilbo is said to be right around in that neighborhood, and he's over 22 miles an hour. I was a bit surprised. I might have guessed Warren Roberson, just because we always hear about how twitchy Roberson is. Roberson might be a little bit quicker. Source mentioned that Gilbo would be a little bit faster when it comes to long speed. And then Grayson Littleton, true freshman we have been talking about since pretty much the second he arrived on campus. He's always turning heads. He popped a 22 this week. That's right in line with what we heard about him when Texas got the flip last October or November. Source said he's a faster Malik Muhammad. So, that's a pretty positive piece of news there.
One of my favorite things about Jalen Gilbo, he ran the 800 for Port Arthur Memorial, I think, during his freshman year. And that's usually not a sprinter's race. That's a little bit of a distance race.
They must have been mad at him.
Yeah. But he also, looking at his athletic.net profile, hit 22.5 in the 200. So it makes a lot of sense that he's got that type of long speed and is someone who –
I think it's testament, the corner, whether or not he had corner speed was kind of the question coming out of high school. 22.5, who knows if those guys aren't running a lot, 22.5 might be impressive. Or if he's considers himself a track guy doing everything track guys do, 22.5 isn't all that great. But I think it's pretty obvious at this point, these guys are getting faster on campus thanks to Torrey Becton. Cause we're seeing surprise after surprise at the NFL combine. We shouldn't be surprised anymore. Gilbo's definitely a 4.4 guy.
Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor, and that is Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
We're going to stay on defense, and you wrote a good amount about the defensive tackle room, but you highlighted the five-star from Manchester, Georgia, Justice Terry. Listed at 268 on the most recent roster update. I'm always curious about where his weight is going to end up. But no matter what he's weighing, it sounds like this is someone who, whether he's in the weight room, whether he's running on the field, no matter what he's doing, it's just different than everybody else at that position.
Yeah, he's a freak. The coaches told him, get away from the D tackles. You got to go run with smaller guys because he's so fast. The source said he's like he's a bigger Baron Sorrell, but he's much quicker. And so wrap your mind around that. A bigger Baron Sorrell. Sorrell was actually pretty quick, drafted in the fourth round, but he's much bigger than Sorrell and much quicker. So I think that gives you a good idea of the athleticism he has. I'm still not convinced he only weighs 268. He looks a lot bigger than that to me. Obviously he's not carrying much bad weight. Right now, they just kind of consider him a defensive lineman, not an edge, not a defensive tackle. But one thing's for sure, they're not letting him work out with the D tackles.
As far as the rest of that room, Steve Sarkisian, when talking about defensive linemen at SEC Media Days, Marad Watson was one of the first guys that he mentioned. And he's seen guys from like Cole Brevard, Travis Shaw, even Hero Kanu throughout the spring. Watson, a more recent arrival along with LaVon Johnson, but Watson's someone I think very highly of, and it sounds like he's proving that he's worthy of that recognition.
Yeah, he's probably the crown jewel of that five-man defensive tackle portal hall, and we heard good things. Even had someone suggest that he'd likely start, but to have Sark name him like one of the first five guys on the entire team, that was eye-opening, so we had to get a little intel on that. Obviously, he came in with the reputation of being a good player, freshman All-American. But, you know, he's like every other D tackle we're hearing about. We'll probably touch on this in a minute, but he's working extremely hard. He moves extremely well. He's the most athletic D tackle outside of however you consider Justice Terry. Justice Terry is in his own class. And he also carries himself like more of a veteran. He doesn't seem like only a sophomore. Once Sark said that, kind of in line with what we've heard in the past, we can pencil him as a starter, probably next to Cole Brevard. But like we've been saying, they're going to play three waves of D tackles and then maybe even intersperse some other guys, because we're hearing just too many positives about the younger guys as well to include Justice Terry. But Marad Watson, all the praise we're hearing behind the scenes is right in line with Sark mentioning him so early when he's running down the roster.
Sark really likes to harp on versatility. And I think Marad Watson brings a level of versatility that, you know what you're going to get in Cole Brevard and Travis Shaw. Like, they have a job on this team, and it's to be right there, be tough to move at 350. Marad Watson can maybe do that at 313, but he seems like he can move up and down the line, and did so at Syracuse too.
Yeah, it's, Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton had that role where they would play defensive end in base. So that could definitely be his. Justice Terry might fit there as well. He's going to be a guy that's probably going to be on the field during all the high leverage situations. It's a matter of, you know, what position is he playing? It could be a defensive end and goal line. Right now, it sounds like he's well worth the investment. And to think they've got at least 2 years of this guy.
This time last year, I was, I think, on that couch when Josiah Sharma flipped from Oregon to Texas. Myron Charles ended up also joining the class. Those are two guys, along with Justice Terry, that Kenny Baker brought in the 2025 class, and already some positive returns on what they've done in the Texas heat here in the past few weeks.
I love what I'm hearing about Josiah Sharma. I don't know how he's not going to be a star at this point. Now, obviously, there's a very long line of experienced players ahead of him. He's only a true freshman. But at 6'4", 350, we're hearing he moves very, very well for that size. Might even move a little bit better than Myron Charles, which is kind of hard to believe. But Sharma is always top of the group. He's always working hard. I'm not surprised by that. Folsom, you know, he spent a year at Folsom, Folsom High School. He has a really good work ethic. I think he came in a little bit ahead of Myron Charles, probably a difference in the high schools he attended. We keep hearing about this guy at 350 pounds in the July heat working out. Man, that just tells you a lot about how his effort level, probably his mental toughness. And to hear that he's very quick at that size, this guy's going to become a multi-year starter.
We've, I think, basically all the way since February, when things were more football-centric, once they got back kind of from the break, we've heard good things about basically the entire defensive tackle room, whether they're transfers, whether they're guys who are still here. I think maybe people overlook Melvin Hills, but even he's gotten a mention at some point during this offseason. And that just speaks to something you wrote in those team notes, that this is a room that doesn't seem to have like divas or personalities like in a bad way. It seems like Kenny Baker has a lot of guys rowing in the same direction at a not often glamorous position.
Yeah, and you can, you know, there's certainly your share of knuckleheads or guys that need to mature at D tackle. And, normally you rarely hear about the guys like Malcolm Brown and Byron Murphy, who are just kind of, you know, ready to go, locked in from day one. A lot of times there's a maturation process. We saw it with, we've seen it with a number of these guys that just got drafted in the last couple of years. You know, the light bulb came on kind of slowly over time. Everything we're hearing about this room right now is kind of mind boggling. It's very positive. The work ethic is there. A number of these guys that are mentioned as Tory Becton's favorites. There's just a maturity in this room and a hunger in this room. And it probably helps that it's so competitive. There's a lot of bodies competing for only so many snaps. I think that helps matters, but it's kind of astonishing because the room is comprised of either transfers or young players. And all we're hearing about is very positive on the mental evaluation side. Kenny Baker might not ever have it any better than he has it right now.
Hey, when you got three straight drafts of putting two defensive tackles into the league, and you got a couple first and second rounders in there as well, it's going to help. And, even Alfred Collins being that second round pick, it seems like he was the first wave or started a wave of second round picks who finally wanted to sign their contract. So you see guys like that in the headlines getting paid. And I guess you understand, like, oh, that could be me someday. So lots of good things.
Hey, Alfred's playing for my team. I can't wait for that. I'm excited to see how it goes. You know, he could you know, they had a guy named Dana Stubblefield back in the day that blew up. You know, then he got lazy, went to the Redskins, signed a big contract. But I think he's got some of that Dana Stubblefield upside. He's got to have the hunger and the light switch on. I can't wait to watch Alfred continue the maturation process.
Should be a lot of fun. Thank you for watching. Of course, got to make sure you go to Inside Texas. A lot more in-depth notes on the team, on recruiting. We'll be back with Recruiting Scoop later today, but we've got some insight on offensive line recruiting. Derek Cooper decides later this weekend. And, of course, Texas is going to be in the mix for a lot of different players down the stretch. Team gets going probably in about just under 2 weeks. Camp will start. We have all the best coverage there. So $1 gets you access until August 30th. And of course, make sure you go to Inside, or the link in the description. We also have it on Inside Texas. Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football. It looks at every position, every opponent, every SEC team, the landscape of college football, and of course, looks through the 2025 class, thanks to Eric Nalin. So, Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.